you're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse.
And hello again. Hello again. This is Ken Logan. And I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, California, and I do the Doctors Inn the third Thursday of every month from 6 in the evening to 7. And what I do is put on cover subjects of medical and health interest that I think would be good for you, the listener, to hear. I think a lot of us, doctors and other healthcare providers in the world, or in this country anyway, have little time, not enough time to talk to the people we're caring for. And so I like to do it on this show. And by the way, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond. And it's at KZFR.org. On the internet, anywhere in the world. And you got to know this, that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. You're listening to me, Ken Logan. Nobody else. And speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by you and your generous contributions as listeners to KZFR, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner with the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair. The technicians at Tires Plus provide year-round services and maintenance for your vehicle, including scheduled maintenance, oil changes, air conditioning and cooling systems, power coating and engine repair, along with Cooper Michelin and all types of ag tires. Located at 624 Broadway Street, Tires Plus. Complete auto repair can be reached at 530-342-8338 and at tirespluschico.com and on Facebook. That's cool. All right, today's show of the Doctor's Inn is going to include me talking just a little bit about COVID. I'm not gonna say too much about it. Just some quick things. Then I'm going to read an article from the Washington Post about food addiction, some addictable foods, and the surprise to me that the tobacco company is involved with that. You got to listen to me on this article. It's a new article. Please listen to that. It's blown me away. And then I'm going to then go over some Just various medical news blurbs, and that's going to be from the American Medical Association Morning Rounds communication thing that they send to physicians. I'm not a member, but nonetheless, I get to hear about medical blurbs on my email, and I want to read some of those to you. I think it's important. And then if I run out of, I mean, if I need something else to talk about, I got some diabetes issues I could talk about. But let me start with the with COVID. Have you all heard of COVID? It's a little virus thing. COVID-19, just a little update. First of all, yesterday, according to the Washington Post, a report there, the Biden administration is reviving the program where they will send us, anybody, COVID tests for free. They will revive that program again as of this coming Monday, the 25th of September. So that's new news. You know, they had put a halt on that free COVID testing at your, you know, sent to your home, but now it's coming back starting this Monday, the 25th. I know you can order it online. I can't tell you exactly how to find it. If you use Google, I'd Google COVID testing, federal government, something like that. Or talk to your doctor's office or any other healthcare office. They may know. The second thing about COVID, I talk about the in-low hospital census of patients that have COVID. And I don't have any, to be honest with you, I don't have any current information. But as of the last 2 to 3 weeks, the word I got from one of the doctors over there was there are about, every day there were about 4 to 8, less than 12 patients in that whole hospital with defined or diagnosed COVID. Now, most of those people were admitted for other problems, and they happen to also have COVID, because, as you probably know, the COVID infections these days are not as generally not as severe as they were over the past 2 to 3 years. So that's good news. But then again, there is a surge of COVID cases now. And then the final thing I'm going to say about COVID on today's show is the new vaccine that's taking into account help on the newer variants of COVID plus the old ones. That vaccination is currently available. The Center for Disease Control, you know, the CDC, advises that all people 60 years of age and older in the United States obtain that shot, that vaccination. I agree with that. I'm going to obtain that myself within the next 2 or 3 weeks with a flu shot in one arm and that COVID shot in the other arm. It's flu season. It's not flu season yet, but it's time for flu vaccination this month and next month. I usually wait till October for mine so that my flu shot lasts the bulk of the time the flu season is here. And flu vaccine is advised for all of us, by the way, every year. I know I'm going to get mine, and I'm going to get flu shot in one arm and that new COVID vaccine in the other arm. you could think of it as a booster, but you know, I heard an infectious disease doc talk about that and saying it this way. Well, you know what? It's not actually a booster of the old shot. It's a new shot. It's got new additional antigens to help broaden the variants of COVID that it's covering. But nonetheless, it's advised by the CDC for people 60 years of age and older. Younger, if you have immune deficiency problems. And if you don't know what that means, then it probably means you don't have an immune deficiency problem if you don't know. But if you're wondering, you should talk with your doctor or other healthcare provider about that question. Generally, part of what it means is people with HIV, for sure, people with immune system modulating medications for conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, or psoriasis. If you're on an immune system modulating medicine, you probably want to get you're eligible for this COVID, new COVID shot, and I would advise it, and a flu shot. Okay, now I'm not going to talk about COVID anymore, I swear, today, anyway. Now, I'm going to be talking about a Washington Post article that was from 2 days ago by Anahad O'Connor. The name of the article is Many of Today's Unhealthy Foods Were Brought to You by Big Tobacco. And just so you know, what that means is these unhealthy foods are foods that are, you'll understand what I'm talking about when I read you this article, what unhealthy foods means, and the role that the tobacco industry played in the presence of these unhealthy foods and the development of them and the pushing of them and the advertising of them and the billions that they made on them over the last 30 years. It's disgusting. Anyway, but I'm going to preface that by saying, and these are my opinions, that over the last 40 years, I've often trying to help people with diabetes, watching how diabetes affects people and my fellow humans, you know, seeing their health and financial consequences of it. And then when I read this article, and to be informed about something that I've wondered about for many years, and that is what exactly has happened in our country and the world, actually, over the past 50 years or so that could help me understand why there's been such a surge in type 2 diabetes and obesity. Why now? What's it different about it? Or what are some of the factors? And what seems to be, when I'm helping patients, people, that there seems to be a brick wall or roadblock often when it comes to encouraging people to eat wisely. And it, part of that is because of the foods that are that they are addicted to, craving and pseudo-addicted to, that are present, that you're going to hear me talk about in a minute on this article. Anyway, that helps me understand that. Now, the other issue relative to people eating wisely with type 2 diabetes has to do with the pharmaceutical industry and where people want, you know, in the United States, they want a pill or a shot or some kind of medicine to help them so they can live an unhealthy way, not as they're advised by their physician, maybe. But, you know what? Give me a pill. Look, what's the advertisement on TV or that shot? You know, I don't have to do anything. I can just take that shot. Or anyway, it bothers me the power of the pharmaceutical industry over people in this country, and the power of the tobacco industry is what you're going to hear about right now. You thought they went away, didn't you? Well, of course they didn't go away, and you wait till you hear what they did over the last 30 years, 40 years. Okay, the article, Washington Post, from the 19th of September. Many of today's unhealthy foods were brought to you by Big Tobacco, by Anahad O'Connor. I'm going to read it to you and kind of edit it a bit as I go. For decades, tobacco companies hooked people on cigarettes by making their cigarette products more addictive. So people would crave them and stay with them and not give them up, and make them millions of dollars, billions of dollars. Well, now, a new study suggests that tobacco companies may have used a similar strategy to hook people on processed foods, certain categories of processed foods. In the 1980s, so about 40 to 50 years ago, tobacco giants Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds acquired the major food companies of Kraft, General Foods, and Nabisco. I didn't know that. Allowing tobacco companies to dominate America's food supply of processed foods and reap billions in sales from popular brands such as Oreo cookies, Kraft macaroni and cheese, and these things called Lunchables. We've all heard about them. We've all eaten them. We've all bought them for our kids. I mean, some of us have. It's disgusting. Keep listening. The new research published in a journal called Addiction. This journal is called Addiction. Recently published information focuses on the rise of what they term as hyperpalatable foods, or foods which contain potent combinations of fat and salt and sugar and other additives that drive people to crave these foods and overeat these foods. The journal Addiction Study found that in the decades when the tobacco giants owned the world's leading food companies, see, they don't actually own them currently, but they did during these recent formative years over the decades. The foods that they sold were far more likely to be hyper palatable and similar foods that were owned by other companies. And by hyper palatable, that means people want them more, buy them more, make them millions more, kind of like cigarettes. In the past 30 years, hyper palatable or crave laden foods have spread rapidly into the food supply, coinciding with the surge, here we go, in obesity and diet-related diseases in our country. In America, the steepest increase in the prevalence of hyper-palatable foods being on the market occurred between 1988 and the year 2001. That was exactly when those large food companies, were owned by two major tobacco companies, Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds. Even though the tobacco companies no longer own those food brands, researchers say the findings matter because many of the ultra-processed foods that we eat today were engineered by that industry that wrote the playbook on how to do hyper-palatable stuff and addictive and appealing to children even stuff, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes. Here's a quote from one of the leading author, a professor from the University of Kansas. Her name is Tara Fazzino. She says, quote, "We found that tobacco companies selectively disseminated hyper-palatable, in other words, crave-laden foods, into the food supply. It's important for people to understand where these foods came from and who was responsible for putting them into the food system in a way that saturated and saturates our food environment even today." And the documents in a library that they pulled together on these products, they identified 105 specific foods that were among the best-selling products for brands owned by either Philip Morris or R.J. Reynolds, those tobacco companies, between 1988 and 2001. At that time, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company owned Nabisco, whose popular brands included Oreo cookies, Teddy Grahams, Ritz crackers, and Snackwell's fat-free devil's food cookies, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. This disgusts me too. But first, Philip Morris, tobacco company, once owned the world's largest food company, Kraft, which joined with General Foods. These are gigantic companies. Well, Philip Morris owned it back then. And they sold brands such as Kraft macaroni and cheese, Jell-O, Kool-Aid, and Oscar Mayer hot dogs. These researchers compared the nutritional makeup of these foods, of these 105 specific foods that they found, to 587 similar products sold by competing brands that were not owned by tobacco companies. And what they found was the tobacco-owned food companies made foods that were 80% more likely to contain potent combination of carbohydrates and salt that people would crave them. They call them these researchers call it hyper palatable foods. Tobacco owned brands were also 29% more likely to contain similarly potent combinations of fat and salt. The findings suggest that tobacco companies engineered processed foods to hit what is known as our, quote, bliss point and elicit cravings, said a professor named Ashley Gearhart at the University of Michigan. who studies food addiction. She wasn't part of this study, but she studies food addiction, Professor Gearhart at University of Michigan. She said that the hyperpalatable foods have a lot in common with other addictive substances. They contain ingredients from naturally occurring plants and foods that are quickly absorbed. These plants and foods are purified and concentrated and transformed in various ways into products that are quickly absorbed into the bloodstream, which amplifies their ability to light up a reward center in our brain. In other words, we immediately associate good feeling or a good thing with that food if it's immediate or very rapidly absorbed into our bloodstream after we eat it, hence addictive features. Quote, every addictive substance is something that we take from nature and we alter it, process it, and refine it in a way that makes it more rewarding. And that is very clearly what happened with these hyperpalatable food substances, Professor Gearhart said. We treat these foods like they came from nature. Instead, they are foods that came from the work done and engineering done by the tobacco industry companies for profit. Tobacco companies got into the food business 60 years ago to diversify their product portfolios. It's all about money and profit, of course. These firms had extensive libraries of things like colors, flavors, additives that they had developed for cigarettes. And these tobacco company executives realized they could use these ingredients to make a variety of processed foods more hyperpalatable. In the 1960s, R.J. Reynolds launched a project also to develop sugary drinks, which involved market research on children. In an internal memo back then, the company's manager of biochemical research wrote to an R.J. Reynolds tobacco company executive that the firm was not merely a tobacco company, but in a broader and much less restricting sense, he says, we're in the flavor business. The research manager noted that many of the flavors the company had developed for cigarettes, quote, would be useful in food, beverage, and other products to allow for large financial returns. The following year, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company bought the maker of Hawaiian Punch, which at the time was simply a cocktail mixer that was available only in two flavors. After conducting dozens of market research studies in children and housewives, R.J. Reynolds expanded Hawaiian Punch to at least 16 flavors, including many preferred by kids. And this is a sugary drink. The company was among the first to introduce the juice box thing, which, of course, was an instant hit. And then this is a UC San Francisco School of Medicine professor, Laura Schmidt, who says, they took something that was an adult cocktail mixer, and a year later, they had turned it into a children's beverage. And then this article goes on to say that R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company used a cartoon mascot, Punchy, named Punchy, to market the Hawaiian Punch to children. For decades, Punchy appeared in TV commercials, Sunday comics, school book covers, toys, magazines, helping to generate tens of millions of dollars in sales and become what R.J. Reynolds called the best salesman the beverage ever had. So its success with Hawaiian Punch led R.J. Reynolds to expand into other foods, including puddings and maple syrup, sweet stuff. Then in 1985, that R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company came up with Teddy Grahams, which soon became the third best-selling cookie, only behind the other two cookies were also made by Nabisco, owned by R.J. Reynolds, Nabisco, and those were Chips Ahoy and Oreo. So R.J. Reynolds Nabisco marketed Teddy Grahams as a, quote, get this, delicious yet wholesome snack because they're made with gram flour and other wholesome ingredients, end of quote. However, in reality, their main ingredient is white wheat flour. They have a small amount of gram flour. The snack was popular with that Nabisco company, and they came up with an adult version because so they could make even more money, and that was called Honeymade Honeycomb Graham Snacks. And this researcher says, Nabisco reasoned that the sweet taste and relatively healthful image, which wasn't true, could also hook adults. Oh, actually, that last quote was from a 1990 New York Times article. Okay, so a couple years later, as something else came up in the health world, medical world, as you can I'm 70 years old, and those of us remember 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the low-fat craze, and all the companies that jumped on that bandwagon. Well, Nabisco was one of them, and owned by R.J. Reynolds, the tobacco company. And they came up with a popular cookie called Snack Wells, which they sold in stores across the country, reaching sales of almost $500 million in 3 years, within the first 3 years. Snack Wells were said to be low-fat and fat-free cookies. And so they appealed to people who were trying to eat low-fat diets and were weight-conscious. Well, the snacks contain lots of sugar and calories. And the critics now point out that people would often binge on them because they thought they weren't fattening. They were okay to eat, so they eat a bunch of them. And that even got a name. They called that phenomenon the snack well effect. Okay, Nabisco. The time that Philip Morris bought Nabisco was in the year 2000, which was already a dominant player in the food industry thanks to its acquisitions of Kraft and General Foods companies, both those companies, in the 1980s. Schmidt at UC San Francisco said that when Philip Morris bought General Foods in 1985, it installed tobacco executives at the food company. Tobacco executives at the food company and launched initiatives to market sugary drinks and processed foods to children and minorities. To broaden the reach of its cigarettes, Philip Morris had used marketing strategy that's called, quote, line, L-I-N-E, extensions, end of quote. Marlboro cigarettes, for instance, were marketed to men. Virginia Slims cigarettes, for instance, are targeted to women. And menthol cigarettes were, at that time anyway, were heavily advertised to black consumers. Not for their health, but for the profit of those companies, of course. Duh. The company applied the same tactics of line extension to processed foods. It added new flavors and formulas to many of its existing products, giving consumers an endless variety of hyper-palatable or craving-like foods to buy. Between 1986 and 2004, Philip Morris had developed a dozen new products of liquid and frozen Kool-Aid, and introduced around 36 child-tested flavors. One of the best-selling products that Oscar Mayer by Philip Morris came up with was the Lunchables. It was designed to look like a TV dinner and marketed to busy moms and their children. The prepackaged meat of bologna and crackers and processed cheese contained so much salt and saturated fat that this article says that some doctors call that, quote, blood pressure bomb, end of quote. I don't know about that, but that's a quote here. One Philip Morris executive joked about references that the healthiest item in the Lunchable package was the napkin. Oh, that's funny. And according to a book, an investigative journalist named Michael Moss, he wrote a book called Salt, Sugar, Fat. It's a best-selling book. Lunchables had sales of $218 million in its first year. This prompted Oscar Mayer, the R.J. Reynolds owned company, to introduce line extensions, or, you know, heading for specific, targeting specific targets. The line extensions of Lunchables with Snickers bars, Reese's peanut butter cups, and Kool-Aid and Capri Sun. So more sugar, sugar, sugar to add to that fat, saturated fat and salt. Not healthy stuff. Not the thing to be pushing. By the early 2000s, Philip Morris was mired in tobacco lawsuits. Moss said, and this is Michael Moss, investigative reporter, investigative journalist. Moss said the company's leadership warned its food side executives that they could face a similar risk of litigation over the health effects of processed foods. One senior Kraft company executive named Michael Mudd, Moss said, reviewed the company's records and products and told Philip Morris lawyer, he was worried that some of its cookies and processed foods could drive people to eat compulsively. This was what they found when they went through those records and documents from those companies, these reporters. So the tobacco companies are no longer in the food business, but the impact they had on the food supply was substantial and exists today. And Professor Fazzino's new study found that by 2018, the differences in previously tobacco-owned foods and other foods on the market had mostly disappeared. The differences had disappeared. All the other companies, many other companies, got on the bandwagon. In other words, other countries saw what worked, and many products likely were reformulated to make them just as hyperpalatable and addictable and people to eat binge on as those sold by their competitors who originated those products. So when I and other healthcare providers deal with our patients and we try to talk to them about wise eating, me knowing these facts that I just read about the development of these behind-the-scenes studies to come up with addictability of these unhealthy foods for people in this country and the world. It helps me understand why some people may be difficult to make changes in their eating habits. And part of that is that they are people are the pawns, the money sources for those large industry food companies. And that's unfortunate, but at least it helps me understand. And so I and other healthcare workers, we need to be more patient with our patients when we deal with them about what they're eating, because I at least better understand what my patients are up against in the market. And how that got that way by the tobacco industry, one of my favorite industries. Not. Okay, I'm going to stop with that subject, but I'm going to move on to some more information that comes from the American Medical Association Morning Rounds. I was talking earlier in the beginning of the show of these little medical tidbits of news that come daily, Monday through Friday, from the American Medical Association to my email, and other, even though I'm not a member of that organization, but they're synopses of a variety of issues, and I think it's a useful tool. And here's some of those blurbs. One of them that I'm starting off with just happens to be dealing with highly processed packaged foods and drinks, like this other article was talking about from the Washington Post. But anyway, this was in the AMA Morning Rounds from this morning, so September 21st, they reported on a CNN and NBC News article about a study that was published in a JAMA publication. And JAMA is a journal of the American Medical Association. Well, this wasn't actually in the journal. It was in another publication by that organization. But it looked at, quote, highly processed packaged foods and drinks, end of quote, and how these products, intake of those products, may increase a person's risk for depression, is what this study showed. The study that they was looking at, that looked at many things in health, but including that, was called the Nurses' Health Study 2. Some of you may have heard of the Nurses' Health Study 2. It's been going on for, gosh, I don't know, I'm going to say 30 or 40 years. Maybe it's longer. I'm not sure. But it's a big deal study over time. And this is more information relative to the downside of processed packaged foods. This adds to the information about these kinds of foods from the Washington Post article that I started out with, right, that we've been talking about, that was, you know, where the tobacco companies played such a role in formulating addictable foods. Then another article from the AMA Morning Rounds from 3 days ago. They reported information from that same Nurses' Health Study that showed increased amounts of sugar, including the sugar found in fruit, called, of course, fructose, was linked with a higher risk for coronary artery disease. And coronary artery disease, you know, is the subject where we're talking about the arteries that feed the heart become atherosclerotic or narrowed, and can therefore then lead to heart attack, or, you know, which is a myocardial infarction or a heart attack. So the higher amounts of sugar, including fruit-related fructose, the higher the risk for problems with your heart arteries, your coronary arteries. Interesting. Then yesterday in the AMA Morning Rounds, they talked about an NBC report on a survey done by the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, that reported that was reported in the journal called Obesity. That's the name of the journal, Obesity. And that one was looking at moderate exercise and the timing of that, relative to helping weight loss. If people are doing a moderate amount of exercise regularly in hopes of losing weight. Now, there's, as we all know, I think, there's, excuse me, there's many, many benefits to regular exercise. Not a lot of exercise even, but regularly done exercise, body activity, I call it. And this study by the CDC, actually it was a survey that came up with this data from the CDC, relative to the timing of the day, the time of the day that people did their body activity thing, they got more bang for their buck of weight loss if they did their activity, their body, their exercise in the morning compared to midday or evening. So morning worked out better for weight loss. That was an interesting CDC report from a survey they had done. And I was thinking, well, what's up with that? And maybe, I don't know, but maybe it's a metabolic stimulation that in the morning, early on, that then hangs on for a longer period of time throughout the day hours instead of going to bed, you know, soon after, you know? Maybe that metabolic stimulation can be benefit a person throughout the day if they more readily, if they do that exercise in the morning. That's when I do my walk, is in the morning. I'm glad. And in that same day of the AMA Morning Rounds, which was yesterday, they report how this is a totally unrelated thing now. We're moving on to a different subject, medical subject, and that is blood pressure testing. And that report talked about how it was an opinion of how the training we get as healthcare providers relative to the taking of a person's blood pressure correctly is lacking. In other words, we don't learn a good job on it. And I definitely agree with that opinion. And I remember back in medical school, a clinician, I remember this to this day, and that was over 40 years ago. This doc said to me, learn to do the common things uncommonly well. Learn to do the common things in medical job. Learn to do the common things uncommonly well. And that certainly sticks relative to taking a blood pressure. And I want you to know, all you listeners, that anybody with high blood pressure or hypertension, in my opinion and other docs, the treatment nowadays involves our desire, and it's best, that a person with high blood pressure play an active role in following their own blood pressure at home. And that, of course, involves being taught by somebody how to appropriately take the blood pressure test, either by a nurse or a doctor or somebody else, nurse practitioner or PA. Blood pressure testing devices, blood pressure cuffs or sphygmomanometers, are available to buy in pharmacies and at yard sales, etc. Sometimes insurance, if you have an insurance policy, maybe it'll pay for it, maybe it won't. If it pays for it and you're going to get insurance to do it, you probably got to get a prescription from your healthcare provider. If you're getting it on your own, you don't need no prescription. If you're testing your own blood pressure, or when you're somewhere where somebody else is testing your own blood pressure, it should be done this way. Here's some important points. You should be resting and relaxed, not running around and then sit down and then bam, right then check your blood pressure. You need to be resting and relaxed. That's the gold standard. When we're deciding what's a normal blood pressure or not a normal blood pressure, it's in the resting, fully relaxed state. Make sure that the cuff part that it goes on the arm, it's the upper arm, make sure that it fits your arm. If you happen to have a arm that is quite large in diameter for whatever reason, either muscle or fat, then the cuff thing that goes on your upper arm needs to be larger than the standard adult size cuffs. You need to buy one that fits your arm. And if you're wondering what that is to fit your arm, the what we call the bladder part of the cuff that goes on your arm, the part of the cuff that goes around your arm that fills with air, it's a inside this fabric and Velcro is a rubber bladdery thing that fills with air, and when it gets pumped up, either by a little squeezy thing or by this little blood pressure machine, when you poke the button, it fills air into this rubber part inside the fabric of that thing that goes around your arm. The entire length of the fabric thing that goes around your arm is not the bladder filled with air. It's the bladder part filled with air is only about a third or a half of that length of fabric. Well, that bladder air-filled part needs to be able to go at least, here's the important point, needs to go at least two-thirds of the way around your arm. In other words, it has to be big enough for your arm. If your arm's big and that bladder part, the air part of that thing that goes around your arm, only goes halfway around your arm, oops, you're not going to get an accurate blood pressure. As a matter of fact, it's going to read you higher than you really are. So you got to get one that fits your arm. It has to go at least two-thirds or more of the way around your arm, the bladder part, the air holding part, the rubber thing that's inside that fabric Velcro thing. Also, you got to do it on the upper arm. And when you put it on the upper arm, you want to have the lower part of that cuff thing that wraps around your arm, the lower part of it, to be fairly close to the crease in your arm. The part of your arm that's right on the other side of your elbow. You know, the elbow, well, on the other side of the arm is that crease where you bend your arm. Well, that lower part of that blood pressure cuff thing that goes around your arm needs to be fairly darn close to that crease. If you have it an inch or more above that up your arm, if you're depending on the size of your arm and the cuff size, if it's up your arm further, it'll read you higher than you really are. It will not be an accurate reading. So you got to have the lower part of that fabric thing that goes around your arm. You got to have it close to the crease of your arm, like no more than an inch away. No more than an inch higher up your arm. So you got to be resting, relaxed. I usually have my people I'm taking a blood pressure on take a deep, relaxful breath in and out. And then I say to them, now do relaxful, normal breathing, because you don't want them holding their breath. You want a big breath in and out, and then relaxful, regular breathing. Have the cuff thing on the arm placed correctly and be big enough. And then how many, you can do more than one test right after another. I've heard people say, oh no, you can't do it right away a second time. Yes, you can. I don't know where that came from. Yes, you can wait a couple minutes and then do another reading if you're wondering what happened with the first one. Often, when I look at information on that people who look at blood pressure, doctors who are writing articles about blood pressure, they say, really, to get an accurate reading, do it two or three times, throw out the first reading, and average the other two readings. Or if you're only doing it two times, throw out, really believe the second reading. If you're going to do it three times, throw out the first reading and average the second two readings. My point is that sometimes when you sit down and slap that thing on your arm or slap it on a person's arm, they're a little nervous. And then so the second and third time you do it is probably more accurate when they're resting. Okay, there you go. I beat up the issue of blood pressure there, didn't I? Well, now, let me go on to another article. This was the AMA Morning Rounds from September 14th, and it reported on an article about drug overdose deaths in the United States, something that you may have heard me talk about on this program before. This was talking about a CDC's Center for Disease Control report that was reported on CNN. As of this past April 2023, the number of drug overdose deaths in the United States over the prior 12 months, prior to April of 2023, it was the highest number of drug overdoses in the United States that had ever been. It made a record. And it was 111 deaths that year, the past 12 months, prior to April 2023, from drug overdose in the United States. The only good news from that report was the rapidity of the rise in the deaths in this country and drug overdose has slowed down dramatically, or fortunately. So that's good. But deaths from drug overdose, as I've talked about before on this show, has largely involved deaths secondary to street use of the drug fentanyl. Now, fentanyl also comes as a prescription for people, some people in pain. But we're talking about street fentanyl. It's a potent, very potent opioid in the same category as heroin and morphine. It's very, very potent. But it's variable. It's so potent that little slight amounts of it can change the potency of it rapidly, or significantly, rather. So it's potent and it's variable. Therefore, when it's bought on the street, it's variable in how powerful it's going to knock that person out. And it can even be in other things as a contaminant, because it doesn't take very much but a powder to contaminate other drugs. And what happens with an overdose of an opioid like fentanyl, heroin, or morphine is, or Norco, or hydrocodone, or oxycodone, is it the person passes out and then they literally stop breathing. That's the big deal. That medication in excess makes people stop breathing. And, of course, then they die. So, here's three things I'm going to now say that can help us potentially help prevent this situation of overdose doses relative to fentanyl. Three things. One, availability of naloxone or Narcan, either by a nasal squirt or injection. It's the antidote to bring a person back from an opioid overdose, like fentanyl overdose. Some good news relative to Narcan or naloxone. Narcan is the name of this, is a brand of this naloxone. Is that a person now, I believe, can buy it in a pharmacy without a prescription. Thank God. Unfortunately, because fentanyl is so very powerful, it may take multiple doses of Narcan to bring a person out of an overdose from it. You need to know that. And remember the number 911. Okay, so that needs to be known by all of us, that the amount of Narcan that's needed for somebody if they've overdosed on fentanyl may be multiple doses. Give it about, I don't know, while you're doing CPR, while you're doing breathing for the patient and doing chest compressions if their heart has stopped. But right off the bat, they're going to quit breathing and their heart's going to still be beating. So breathe for them. Breathe for them. Breathe for them. And use Narcan if you can. But somebody needs to call, if you have it, I mean, you need to call 911, but you need to breathe for them. If their heart stops and they have no pulse, then you need to do chest compressions as well. The second thing that can help with naloxone, or I'm sorry, with fentanyl overdose is getting people on a treatment program that includes medication-assisted treatment is an immediate helpful program. In other words, you can start it any day. I mean, you don't have any day you can get an appointment anyway. The two products that are used for medication-related treatment of opioid addiction are a methadone, and the clinic for that in Chico is an AGEIS, A-G-E-I-S clinic. It's a pill or a liquid oral. But the other prescription product that a doctor can give you to help with opioid addiction is Suboxone. But there's actually, that's a brand name. There's two other brands now, Subsolve, Z-U-B-S-O-L-V, and another one, Sublocade, S-U-B-L-O-C-A-D-E. All three of them are naloxone or Narcan combined with an opiate, opioid called buprenorphine. And then either buprenorphine, a naloxone mix called Suboxone or those other names, or methadone is used in a medication-assisted help for a person who's addicted to an opioid like fentanyl or heroin. And then hopefully over time the physician is able to, with other support for the person, is able to taper the person off over months off of that product. But it's a controlled phenomenon. Two sites in Chico I know that can happen at is Ampla Health Chico and Butte County Behavioral Health. But there are other single physicians who do it in their process. So I'm not sure how you're going to find that out. And the third thing is there's a nonprofit called North Valley Harm Reduction Coalition, Friday mornings, 10 to noon. No appointment necessary. It's free. You can have all the Narcan you want. It's free. And there's somebody there who can help steer you to drug medication treatment for opioid addiction programs. And that's where there's a doctor present Friday mornings from 10 to noon, and they supply people who are on injectable street drugs with clean needles and syringes and sharps containers to put them in, and they take the sharps containers back, and so they're disposed of correctly. There's even a disposal for sharps containers or even water bottles that have plastic water bottles that have needles and syringes in them outside the gate. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for people to put them in so they don't leave them on the street. So they don't leave needles and syringes on the street. That's a good service that North Valley Harm Reduction Coalition does for this community. That is at 171 East 18th Street, half a block off of Park. 171 East 18th Street, no appointment necessary. Anybody can get lots of Narcan there, by the way. Even if you're not a drug user, but you know somebody who is, etc. Well, let's see. Now what am I doing? I tell you what. I got a couple more minutes. I don't have the last... I don't have another song pulled up yet. I might just play the other old song, the beginning song again. It's so fun. I enjoy that song so much. By Loudon Wainwright III, called The Doctor. Well, something you need to hear me say is the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And as you know, this is 90.1 KZFR, FM, KZFR 90.1 Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And it's also on KZFR.org. And I would love for you to know this. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by D.A. Lampe, and Lampe is L-A-M-P-E, Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit dalampeconstruction.com. And by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5:30 p.m. at 176 East 3rd Street, 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico, serving Chico and the North State since 1975, which is great. I'm going to set up for you to hear, starting in a couple minutes, a minute and a half or so, 1 minute, Planetary Radio. So stay tuned for that. And right now I'm going to try to get you just a touch of The Doctor by Loudon Wainwright III. Let's see if I can do that.
I'm 71. You're falling apart. You're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. To the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said,
seeking life among the stars. This week on Planetary Radio. I'm Sarah Al-Ahmed of the Planetary Society, with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Welcome to a very special episode of Planetary Radio. I've had the pleasure of speaking to so many amazing people from across the space community, but this conversation is one that I think I'll always remember. Louis Friedman, one of the three co-founders of the Planetary Society, joins us today to talk about his new book, Alone But Not Lonely, Exploring for Extraterrestrial Life.